what we looked at were, again, my name is Rodney Bowden, I'm from Baylor University, and we looked at systemic inflammation following the supplementation of fish oil. We've done a lot of omega-3 fatty acid work where we've looked at inflammation, thank you, as well as looking at cholesterol and lipid levels. So very quickly, our fish oil supplements were provided by Life Extension out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So they gave those to us for the study. And then also quickly, just these are some of the co-investigators that were with us as well, most of them in the Texas area, and then one in Australia as well. He was in Texas, but now he's in Australia. So I want to give you just a kind of a lit review briefly, as well as a methodology. When you look at the patient population that we work with are chronic kidney disease patients. And these CKD patients are anywhere from renal insufficiency, and renal insufficiency is just like it sounds, where the kidneys don't work very well, all the way up to end-stage renal disease or kidney failure, those that are on dialysis. So our studies generally, this is the rare exception, but generally we look at end-stage renal disease patients or those that are not undergoing dialysis. But in this case, we blended the two. And what you'll see is that when you look at chronic kidney disease patients, they typically have high levels of inflammation. They have nutritional status that's a challenge. And then also we'll have some abnormal results with cholesterol. A lot of the studies that we have found that if you find chronic kidney disease patients that have high levels of inflammation, low levels of nutrition or poor nutritional status, that they actually will have normal cholesterol values but have increased risk for mortality through heart disease. So that's just the opposite of what you see, and that it's important for us to talk about that, about what's going to come up in a little bit. But what that says is, again, that there is this what has been termed reverse epidemiology. So it's this term that looks at normal cholesterol being associated with high levels of mortality, specifically with heart disease. Just the opposite of what someone who normally doesn't have high levels of inflammation suffers from. So in this particular population, we had two dialysis clinics. We recruited about 45 participants. About 31 of those participants then finished the study. And we randomized them into a fish oil group or a placebo. And the placebo was a rice flour. And you'll notice our sample sizes are fairly close, 17 in that fish oil group, and then 14 in placebo. And then we had about 1.4 milligrams of EPA, 1,000 of DHA, and I should say 1.4 grams. And so what you look at in fish oil and omega-3s is you want that EPA and DHA to be fairly high. That seems to be the oils within the fish oil that seems to have the therapeutic effect on cholesterol and inflammation, as well as some other risk factors. So we then followed them over time, and at baseline we measured these inflammatory markers of tumor necrosis factor alpha, what's called interleukin-1 beta and interleukin-6, or IL-6, IL-1 beta and TNF-alpha. And these are inflammatory markers that tell us that these patients, whether they have high levels of inflammation or low levels of inflammation. And in reality, some of these as well can be what are called anti-inflammatory cytokines that then once they reach a certain level, they become pro-inflammatory. So there are a number of different comorbidities that go along with measuring inflammation too that's important. And we measured at baseline and then followed them over a period of 8 weeks or 2 months and measured the same factors then at time two. So to spare you from having to listen to someone who's hoarse, let me kind of cut to the chase on a little bit of this. You'll notice that this is our pretest, our baseline analyses, where we look to see if there were any significant differences between the groups. So you have your fish oil group, you'll notice on the left, and then your placebo group on the right, on your right, and then the p-value. So you'll notice gender was fairly the same, ethnicity, no significant differences, age. But what I want you to look at is though these were not significant, there were two variables here that were of importance to notice. And I think this is what has some very strange implications on what we discovered in this particular study. So you'll notice that in weight and in waist circumference that our fish oil group, though this was a randomly selected, it was a randomized controlled trial that was double-blinded, that we wound up having those that were heavier and a larger waist in our fish oil group. So there was a, though not statistically significant, we think that's, again, a sample size artifact suggesting that our population more than likely in the fish oil group had a higher level of inflammation. Now also then, I want us to kind of briefly look at the pretest differences, because there's some very interesting findings here. So you'll notice that there's TNF-alpha, IL-1 beta, and IL-6, looking at their pretest measures versus post-test measures, and you'll notice there's only one significant difference with these groups. And the significant difference that we discovered was at post-test, and this is, again, an ANCOVA, that says ANOVA, but the ANCOVA looked at weight and height. It looked at what's called albumin, which is a nutritional marker that we use, as well as looking at cholesterol values to control for those variables such that we would then know that these are isolated differences between these groups. So you'll notice that post-test, then we had a significant difference in TNF-alpha. But if you'll notice that, can you see who's the higher of the two? Which particular group, fish oil or placebo? Yeah, the fish oil group. Now, we've conducted omega-3 fatty acid studies for about a decade now. And one thing we have discovered in every single study we've conducted is that either one of two things happened. Either there was no difference between groups, or the fish oil group had improved inflammatory markers or improved cholesterol values. So this is the first study we've ever had that we've conducted where we had an actual increase, significant increase, in inflammatory markers in the fish oil group. Now, you'll notice it's only one marker, so there were three markers that were not elevated. So the reason, then, we have to think about what is it specifically that caused there to be an increase in this inflammatory marker. Why is there more inflammation in this placebo group? And we think, as all research is, we speculate, but we think we may know. So if you look at, again, a randomized clinical trial, so we randomly selected those to be an fish oil or placebo, and you'll notice that each one of these stages on the left is a stage of kidney disease, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 5 is end-stage renal disease patients. So these are folks that their kidneys have failed and they're on dialysis 3 days a week for about 3 to 4 hours a day. And you'll notice then that there's a significant number of participants in the fish oil group that were kidney failure patients. Just happened to work out that way, again, with that random trial. Now, the thing about kidney failure patients, you'll notice as kidney failure progresses, then the single greatest risk factor for kidney failure, two greatest risk factors are obesity as well as hypertension. And those are two pro-inflammatory states. So what we think and what we saw here is that these end-stage renal disease patients have a significantly higher level of inflammation, though if we go back, you'll notice we don't see that in the pretest results for most, with the exception if you look at IL-6 and IL-1 beta, they're certainly slightly higher, but nothing of note and nothing that was significant. So what we think is that because we had a higher level of inflammation in the placebo group, that we were not able to overcome the comorbidities that go along with end-stage renal disease, with kidney failure or dialysis. Dialysis itself is a pro-inflammatory process. It causes inflammation levels to go up. It can affect nutritional status and cause a number of different issues within that particular patient population. So that was one particular thing we speculated that maybe for the first time, you know, you learn your lessons, for the first time we looked at ESRD patients as well as CKD patients that are non-dialysis at the same time. We've rarely done that. We've never done that. And so this was the first stab, and we learned our lesson, I think. So what I would offer to you then is there are a few studies that are looking at fish oil and chronic kidney disease. There are a number of studies that have looked at fish oil and kidney failure, which is still chronic kidney disease, but it's stage 5. So there are a few studies that have tried to look at chronic kidney disease, non-dialysis, and looking at fish oil, and even less that are looking at these pro-inflammatory cytokines. Traditionally, when you go to a clinic, you're going to find that most of the time they will measure what's called C-reactive protein, or CRP. And so we're measuring something that's even unique within the clinical setting. So it's measuring these inflammatory markers that most don't look at. So first thing, again, there's not a lot being conducted on these particular patients, which is why we want to do this. We also discovered there were no differences in IL-1 beta and IL-6, but we did notice then, as you saw, a higher level of inflammation in our fish oil group in TNF-alpha. Now, TNF-alpha then, the cascade down from TNF-alpha is CRP. So in other words, we think that as TNF-alpha went up, we're going to see that CRP levels probably went up as well. We just haven't analyzed that data and aren't at the place to analyze it yet. So some of the shortcomings of our study, if you look at number four there, is most of the studies that we have conducted have been between 6 and 8 months. This particular one was for 8 weeks or 2 months. So we think maybe there might be some sort of effect that takes longer. It may take longer being exposed to omega-3 fatty acids to reduce inflammation, and in other cases we've talked about reduced cholesterol. We also had a small sample size, and we lost a few patients. Most reported gastrointestinal distress. They dropped out. We also had some real struggles that a lot of the patients that we were working with were... They had cell phones but not landlines, and their cell phones were disconnected routinely. So when it came time for a follow-up, we couldn't find them. They didn't have email as well. So we literally had about 10 patients that just disappeared, kind of fell off the grid, and we were not able to find them. And then they showed up at the clinic about 3 months later, and the study was already over. Then also you'll notice that this inflammation is a significant problem, such that we as a PhD, but we working with the MDs that we work with, they are beginning to look at something other than cholesterol. So I've spent about 15 years kind of chasing cholesterol, trying to figure out how it predicts heart disease in chronic kidney disease states, as well as other chronic diseases. So the struggle that we're running up against with cholesterol is suddenly there's this new term, reverse epidemiology, so we need to figure out what it is that's specifically causing normal cholesterol values to be associated with more mortality and abnormally high cholesterol values to be associated with less mortality in ESRD patients and CKD patients. And we think it's inflammation. That's kind of why we've gone this direction. So we know it's a significant problem in CKD and ESRD patients. It's worthy of note that we need to study. And then also this... we have, since this study, we continue to move to larger doses, and these larger doses of EPA and DHA. Because of these comorbidities, then you certainly don't want to cause more pill fatigue that you have many times with chronic kidney disease patients or ESRD patients. They're taking a significant number of pills already. And so you introduce more, and that just doesn't really accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. What we're trying to accomplish is improve their quality of life. So by taking more pills, that's the challenge. So we're trying to slowly introduce less pills with a larger dose of EPA and DHA. The next study that we will conduct is going to be looking at what's called Cooper's Complete. Ken Cooper out of Dallas, Texas, has kind of known as the father of aerobics, and he has created a supplement we think is going to work a little bit better. We can take less pills. And then also one thing, too, was cluster randomization. There's a real possibility that if we could cluster based on diabetic status, based on kidney failure status 2, 3, 4, and 5, as well as what you see there, waist and weight circumference, we might be a little bit more successful in at least trying to understand what's happening, that when you use fish oil and inflammation goes up, that's counterintuitive to what we've discovered for the last 10 years. So there's got to be a different way in which we think we can look at randomizing our procedures and recruiting patients. So very quickly, that was the 5-minute version or 10-minute version. So we can be ready. It's actually for me. I'm short on energy.
No,
and I may have misspoke then on that, because it was time zero at baseline, and then time one would probably have been more appropriate, which is at 8 weeks. So there was no measurement in between. There was measurement zero and then 8 weeks.
Oh, okay. Was there any reason why you didn't want to have a midpoint measurement?
We really struggled with, you know, the physicians we work with advised us with as little visits as possible. Because we struggled, as you saw, you know, we lost 10 where they just fell off the grid. We had 4 or 5 with GI problems. But we had a real struggle with getting patients to come back. And so part of that, his thought was, the physician's thought was, two of them, was that if we asked him to come back less, we think he'll be more successful. Because we wanted to stretch it out to 6 months. We wanted to stretch out to where we had a month between each particular measurement point. And they said, it's just not going to work. We don't think it will. We think if you can look at 2 months and measure them twice, you'd be more successful.
So the next part of my question is, so were you really looking at efficacy? Because I think, I guess I'm trying to understand, mm-hmm. if you wanted to increase the dose, then you're moving out of moving more into the efficacy role of this trial. So what was your overall point in terms of the dosing you're using at this point and then going up to a higher dose?
Yeah. The bottom line is the number of pills they have to take. If we were to get beyond this 1.4 grams and 1 gram of EPA and DHA, you just have to significantly increase the number of pills they take. So this time they were taking one pill at each meal, so 3 total pills a day. Certainly we could increase it to 2 pills at each meal, but again, it's been our experience with the other research that we've conducted that the more pills we ask them to take, the higher experimental mortality we have. More folks drop out of the study and report just not wanting to continue to take extra pills and that many more pills and have to think about that many more pills. You'll see a lot of times, you know, they will carry, as my mother did. She was very sick and had ovarian cancer, but they have the boxes. This is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they're just loaded with pills. And this moved them to a second pill box that they had to carry. And most didn't want to do that. So again, part of the reason we want to increase the dose is we think it'll be more effective at a larger dose, but we don't want to increase the number of pills they take. And that's why this next round would look at one that it'll have 3,600 milligrams of EPA and about 2,000 of DHA. It's probably the other way around. But looking at those supplements, to where they take the same amount of pills, but get a lot more EPA and DHA.
And just a recommendation, in your analysis, for those comorbid conditions that cause inflammatory state, mm-hmm. you could control for them and then look at your pure effect based upon the inflammatory state for those patients that you're truly interested in medical health. Probably get some better.
Yeah, I accept you. Thank you. We'll have one here and then we can go ahead. Yes,
I was just wondering why you chose 8 weeks as an intervention.
It's a very practical reason, because we were not funded as well, and it fit within Medicare guidelines of when to draw blood. So you can come in, and it's part of their normal standard medical practice to come in at these time points and draw blood, and part of that then is a normal routine cholesterol measure, as well as inflammatory markers, and it just fit within the reimbursement cycle. Mm-hmm. Very practical.
Very
practical. Yeah. Yes, sir.
A couple of questions. Where are you planning to increase the dosage when you have the literature-wise as well as your trials limitations are there, which might have an influence over your results, for example, duration of treatment?
Right.
Or the randomization did not work either.
Right.
So also that the sample size is not big enough either. So why change the protocol, which always happens, like most of the times when a good treatment might be shown as not effective just because of all these methodological flaws. And so I'm just wondering, like, if you do that.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. One of the discussions we had internally was, patients can be exposed to the same amount of EPA and DHA, but they can be exposed to it over a 2-month period or a 6-month period or a 1-week period, depending upon how many supplements they take. So the question becomes then, exposing to the same amount of the fish oil, in a shorter period of time versus a long period of time, will that have any sort of effect? So that's one thing we're trying to think to see if it would, and that exposure status is an important part of EPA and DHA. Two, getting back to the idea of pill fatigue and how many pills and for how long they need to take. As a trial gets longer, then we're challenged with having more experimental mortality, more people dropping out. One of the ways we've tried to correct for that is we routinely provide incentives. And those are incentives is that we give them Visa cards so that they can. And that was a great, we always have an internal debate with the docs about how to do that. Simply because how do we think the patients will spend the money? Are they going to spend it in ways in which it adds to some of the comorbidities they have? And how can we limit that? And the answer is we can't. And so we try to incentivize them, but also educate, use it as a public health outreach to educate the importance of certain risk factors and how those risk factors impact chronic kidney disease. Just to kind of go off on a tangent very quickly, we discovered that we had two doctoral students that were working with us. And early on, we discovered that there were a number of patients that when we said, you've been asked to be in this study by your physician because you have chronic kidney disease, and they said, what is that? And I don't think I have that. And so we had to back off from, we had to meet with the physicians again and say, okay, here's the issue. Obviously, doctoral students can't be informing patients if they have chronic kidney disease, so we need to figure out a better way in which to do this. And one of them was that they saw a physician first. The physician informed them why they might be eligible for the study. And then that's when we stepped in and said, and here are the risk factors for chronic kidney disease and how we can ameliorate that. And then here is why fish oil might be important for particular participants. So, yes?
I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind go back to the
Stop me when I get there. This one? Okay.
My question is, when you do the p-value, are you just to compare the placebo group versus the fish oil on each row, right?
Yeah.
So my question, I guess, is why don't you take the fish oil group's change, compare that change?
Percent change.
So that way you adjust your baseline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a good measure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that advice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good measure.
And also, I have a question regarding the adenocyte. You said it's a small, I'm not a clinician,
okay.
I do not have any major cost concern.
Okay.
My question is, when you design the study, you at least probably think of the power.
Right. Yeah, this one was definitely underpowered, and I think that's evidenced by this particular result. I think it demonstrates we had certainly clinically significant differences in fish oil and placebo that weighed in waste, but they weren't statistically significant. And I think that points to an underpowered study. Most definitely. Yes.
The second question was regarding the job force. Why were they not included in your final analysis? Why did you not?
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part.
Why did you not include the job force in your final
analysis?
Oh,
yeah. Literally 10 of them, we couldn't find them. They
you
just
should not, but you should include
yeah.
them in the analysis. Once they are enrolled, you're supposed
right.
to include them in your final analysis.
But we didn't have any post-test data on them. So there was no way to compare post-test results because they didn't come to their appointment. When we called them, there was no answer. The cell phone had been disconnected. There was no landline. So there was just literally no way for us to contact them. Even the clinic, we worked through the clinic to try to get them to contact them, and we couldn't. So we have pre-test data, but we don't have any post-test data. So there was no way for us to compare post-test results to anything of those that had not finished the study because we just simply didn't have it. And I understand the intent to treat guidelines, and we do that. But, yeah, it's the first study we've ever experienced that where we just couldn't find them. They just literally disappeared. Yes?
I'm not surprised at that. Speaking
yeah.
of compliance,
yes.
Did you
Yeah, you know, we do, we follow standard, you know, the pill count approach to compliance, which is the best you got unless you look literally at the cell and see how much, you know, how much there's been an increase in omega-3s. And we didn't have funding, so we didn't do that. So it was pill count, and what we would do is have them come in and you know, you have to stress, I mean, that's a weakness of the study, but you have to stress that whether you finish them or not is not what's important when you report back to us. So we don't want you to pour the pills out real quick and empty it out and then bring it to us. We had weekly follow-up, so we had folks that were calling them, just making sure, encouraging them to take their pills, encouraging them if they don't, to still bring those back, and that's okay. The incentive was not that you finish your pills, the incentive was that you finish the protocol. And sometimes they didn't. So when we looked at compliance, we had, studies are running together, but this particular group, we had a 92% compliant of those patients that were in placebo and fish oil. And again, that was one of the analysis, one of the covariates I didn't mention in that COVA that we looked at was compliance too.
But how could it have been 92% compliant when you had this dropout of at least 10?
Yeah.
You mean compliant in terms of taking fish oil?
Finish the study.
So those compliant in terms of finishing,
yes.
But not...
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly make the case that those that didn't finish the study were not compliant. I think it's safe to say. But, again, we didn't have that data. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.